Although it's hard to think about gardening right here in the middle of winter when Robin is stepping in slush right outside of her apartment and everyone else is dealing with the chilling cold, it's always a good time to talk about planting. And our next guest this evening is joining us to do just that. Kyle Kramer, America Magazine columnist, teacher, and organic farmer, is author of the new book, A Time to Plant, Life Lessons in Work, Prayer, and Dirt. Kyle is the director of lay degree programs at St. Meinrad School of Theology in St. Meinrad, Indiana. And in his debut book, he tells the story of how he came to experience the joys of real community and the power of dirt. Welcome to the Busted Halo Show, Kyle Kramer.
Hi, Father Dave. How are you?
I am ready to get dirty this evening, sir. We are way too clean here in our New York skyscraper.
I agree. Let's get to it.
So now, if I'm not mistaken, you quit your job and bought a parcel of land in Indiana so that you could organically farm. Is this correct, sir?
You've got it right.
Okay. What made you do that?
Well, I was in Atlanta at the time. I had finished up some seminary training, and I was teaching high school. And I guess I'd say at first I wasn't miserable. I had a meaningful job. I was teaching kids who had failed out of every other school. I had a great community of parishioners and friends. So I guess I'd say I ran towards something good rather than running away from something awful. That'd be the first point.
And something good is a parcel of land.
Exactly.
Yeah, okay.
Well, it didn't necessarily seem like that at first glance, but I guess what I was seeking was a sense of homecoming. I didn't mind living in Atlanta per se, but I knew I wasn't cut out for a big city, and I wanted to be closer to family and really just to plant myself firmly in one place. And I wanted a life that integrated my head and my soul and my hands. I was a kind of a motorhead growing up, and I was really drawn to the idea of farming, even though I had no experience with it, because as I imagined it, to do it well would require that I engage all of those qualities.
The head, the hand, the hearts, the jeans, getting the jeans dirty?
Exactly. No, not the jeans, the Carhartt.
So, oh, right, I'll go, of course, yes. So is this, for those who are out there listening, who maybe live an urban life, there's a lot of people that drive, a lot of over-the-road truck drivers listen to our show this evening. Mm-hmm. Is it an easy thing to kind of suddenly be a farmer if you haven't done that before?
It's about as easy as jumping off a cliff.
Okay, that's not easy.
No. Well, yeah, the jumping is the easy part. It's the landing that's tough. I would say, no, that is something to jump in with great trepidation. And thankfully, I was young and naive enough to have no idea what I was getting myself into. I guess the good news is that it does get easier. I had a pretty steep learning curve as a farmer, and particularly trying to farm in ways that weren't all that conventional, and again with no background. But I was rescued by angels. Literally, I had a variety of folks who I guess took pity on me and realized that I was in way over my head. When I first got out there, I had this bulky old tractor that wouldn't run, and I had stalled it out in the middle of the field, you know, hundreds of yards away from my tools, and I just started throwing tools and cuss words and everything else into the woods, and this neighbor I'd never met walked up behind me. Somehow he'd found me out in this field, I guess because he heard me cursing, and he fixes my tractor right there with, I'm not kidding you, with baling wire.
Wow. Now, when he walked into the cornfield, did you hear a voice saying, "If you build it, he will come"? Was it like that? Shoeless Joe is helping you out? Or?
No. The only voice I guess I've heard in connection with the farm that's something like that was, and in all seriousness, when I was looking at the piece of land to contemplate purchasing it, and I had no idea what I was looking at, not being a farmer, I didn't really quite know what good land was or what.
Yeah, I mean, is it like square? Is it dirt? Is it rocky? You know, what are you looking for? I don't know.
Oh, well, I had a few things in mind, but in any case, when I got to this parcel of land, and it had been overgrown for several years, just really abused throughout the last century, really, but particularly in the last couple of years, and even so, looking at that mess that it was, I heard this voice. It's one of the only times I've heard what I think are divine voices in my head that said, "I know this looks rough now, but if you take on this project and bring this land back to health and do that and, you know, become connected to this place and connected to the community and do all of that as a prayer, that's enough. That's a life well lived. And that was the pole star. It still is for me. Anything else would be gravy on top of that vision.
Well, I mean, I can probably imagine several people listening to the show right now saying, well, that sounds like that worked out well for Kyle. But how do you help us, in your book, A Time to Plant, how do you help us make that connection to our spiritual lives that you've sort of discovered by tilling the earth?
Well, I guess I'd say, you know, I've made a particular set of choices that that reflected my interests and my gifts. And someone could say, well, you made a pretty radical leap into this kind of life, and not that many people can do that or would even want to. And I agree. I don't think the back to the land movement is for everybody, although I wish it were for more people. I think more people should try it. They might actually like it. But I do think every Christian's called to live radically. I just don't think Jesus died on a cross so we could have a fat 401k and a Starbucks latte every morning. He doesn't strike me as kind of a comfy, generic Walmart savior. But what I guess what radical means then is going to look differently depending on your context, your gifts, the needs you see around you. And I think there are plenty of ways, essential ways, to have an ecologically responsible life and a spiritually rich life in a city or suburb. If you've got the right intentions, the right path is going to become clear to you.
Intentionality. That's an important piece. Kyle Kramer, our guest this evening on the Busted Halo Show. Life Lessons in Work, Prayer, and Dirt, A Time to Plant. Is planting an important piece? Making roots?
Absolutely. I have this term. I don't know if I thought of it, but in any case, I used
it. Let's just say you did.
Okay. Yeah. I invented this term called a vocation of location.
Ooh, I like it.
That's clever, isn't it?
Yeah, very
Actually,
nice.
It's so clever that I came to discover St. Benedict thought it up 1,500 years ago. He may not have called it the same thing, but what I've learned, actually, both from my farming experience and from hanging around with Benedictine monks for over 10 years, is that when you do put down roots in a place, be they agricultural roots or roots in a community, a neighborhood, in a monastery, on a city block, you commit yourself to everything that's going to happen in that place and all of the people that are going to come through your life in that place, everything that God is going to reveal in that place. And so you basically say no to the idea that there are always greener pastures elsewhere. And those greener pastures could be other places, but they could also be other things you're going to buy, other experiences you're going to have, traveling, you're going to do all of that. What I've learned from the monks and from farming is when you get rooted in one place, you simply have to start practicing acceptance. You have to accept the people you're living with, even though they may not be your favorite folks. And you have to accept bad weather when it comes, and crops that failed when you tried everything in your power to make them succeed. And to my mind, that ability to accept what is, that is one of the first serious steps of the spiritual life. And then to accept it implies to find a way to be grateful for it as well.
Well, and as a matter of fact, monks, and you're connected with Benedictine monks there at St. Meinrad's in Indiana, and Benedictines and other monastic, those who choose monastic life, will not only commit themselves to things like things that may sound novel, you know, from the 1990s and 2000s, sustainability and locally grown stuff, but they've been doing this for centuries, millennia, in fact.
Absolutely. I mean, again, I know the Benedictine example best, but I think you could multiply it certainly with the Franciscans as well. But when the Roman Empire collapsed back in, I guess, the 5th century, and Europe collapsed along with it, it was the Benedictines and other monastics that really rebuilt things. They were the ones that started rehabilitating the land and carrying on what remnants of culture they could scrap together, the whole tradition of copying texts and things like that. That was a monastic practice, and I think you could make a case that not to sound too dramatic, but that the monks certainly had a hand in saving Western civilization, for all that's worth.
Why not? Come on. These are good book titles. The Monks Saved Western Civilization.
There are probably titles like that out there.
Got to be bold.
I know the
bold.
Irish did it, but the Benedictines did too.
Well, and one of the points you're making, it seems that that is constitutive to certainly a Benedictine monk's life. They make a promise, if I'm not mistaken, not only of those vows that we typically hear of in religious life of poverty, chastity, and obedience, but also one of stability.
That's exactly right.
Meaning not just that, you know, I'm not going to pick up and move every couple of years, but also stable to this place. And as you're saying, we may think of that geographically. But, you know, in terms of the weather, I know some Benedictines at Collegeville in Minnesota. And boy, if you talk about, you know, there's maybe 6 weeks out of the year where the weather is ideal in Collegeville, Minnesota. And, you know, you've got 5 months of torrential, bitterly cold winter and then really hot and humid and buggy summers. And they make a commitment that part of the vows we take means that we're committed here where this is. And for them in their lifestyle, and I'm sure you experience this, as we all do with families, that we make a commitment also to these people. Sometimes they're sitting next to the same darn monk at the dinner table, you know, for their entire lives. That's that vow of stability. So in a world that is very transient and very on the go and very mobile, and half the time we're more committed to the people that we're texting on the other end of the phone than we are the people we're sitting right across from at dinner, that this is really radical. That's what you're saying.
You know, it is. It's radical, both because it's so different from what the wider culture is promoting right now, and it's radical in the true sense of that word because it's rooted. That's what radical means. It's grounded.
Didn't know that.
Yeah.
Explain.
In real, well, that's the word radical means root. And a life like that is rooted, to my mind, in what's real. And back to the idea of the stability of place, or that vow of stability, staying in one place. And when you think about it in ecological terms, there really is only one place. We've got one planet, as far as we know. Certainly, you know, it's the only planet we can inhabit at this point. And so,
well, if there's any other planets with oil out there, we're probably going to find those planets.
And pop a well, too.
Yeah.
No, but when you think broadly about it, we all have to take that same vow of stability, whether we know it or not, because we're all stuck, wonderfully so, on the same planet together. And just like the monks have to learn to live together in their one particular community, and we have to do that in our own communities and circumstances, writ large, we've got to do the same thing as a global community. We're just, I think, beginning to wake up to that insight that Benedict had and other religious voices have had for centuries.
Well, and what you're talking about is, and I didn't ask you about this at the time, but certainly having grown up in much more of an urban setting, when you said that this parcel of land that you got had been abused for a century, and I'm thinking to myself, what can you do to dirt, for crying out loud? But there are things that we're discovering that, you know, we have this mentality, you know, modern mentality, which is very consumerist, or, you know, consumable, that we just kind of use up and then there will always be more. If I exhaust the resources of this little, you know, square block, well, then we'll just get them from somewhere else. You know, if we can't get fruit in season, well, we'll get it from New Zealand. It's always in season there, right?
Right. Well, I think you're right, Father Dave. We have that kind of consumption and mining mentality, and we've applied it in the industrial world. We've applied it in the agricultural world, and we've looked at soil as something that we can just use up. But you know, the fact of the matter is, it takes nature about 500 years to build an inch of topsoil.
Whoa!
And in the past,
I thought you just get it in like a big white bag from like the Home Depot.
From where?
Exactly. Oh, okay.
They ain't making any more of it.
Oh, I see.
And so, you know, we're burning through just millennia, tens and tens and hundreds even of thousands of years worth of soil accumulation, you know, in the last century and a half. I won't get on my environmental bandwagon, but as a farmer, it's hard to think that we could keep going this way.
Wow, interesting.
And I really think that Christians and Catholics, particularly because we have such a well-developed architecture of social thought and increasingly of environmental thought, we should be on the front edge of those changes.
Well, the book is Life Lessons in Work, Prayer and Dirt, A Time to Plant. Kyle T. Kramer, the author. If you had to leave us, before we let you go, if you had to leave all of our listeners, many of whom are not farmers, of course, and many of whom actually almost the opposite of being in one place. We have so many people that travel for a living that listen to our channel that if you had to leave them with one nugget from the book that might inspire them to say, ooh, I think I need to read more of that book, what would that be? What can we kind of grasp onto, whether it is living simply in some ways or being connected to the land in some way that is possible for people that aren't farming? What is that?
Well, I'll give you two for the price of one.
Oh, excellent. Two for Tuesday. Thank you.
I'll be quick. The first one is everybody can move towards simplicity. You don't have to be a hero. You don't have to be a saint. You don't have to live on a farm or build a house. And you don't have to be perfect. You just have to start. And you can start small. Everybody can do something, even if it's just cooking a meal at home or going to a farmer's market or having folks over rather than simply watching TV. That's the first thing. And the second thing I'd say, which is the most important of all, is learn to fall in love and learn to stay in love. And I say fall in love with God, with your vocation, with a place, with a people. And all of the disciplines of staying in love are the exact same disciplines that will make for a spiritually rich life and an ecologically responsible.
Wow, beautiful. Well, the book is called A Time to Plant, Life Lessons in Work, Prayer, and Dirt. Kyle T. Kramer joining us on the Bus at Halo Show. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Brother Dave.
Now, do you have to get up like at 5 tomorrow morning and be hoeing and tilling and whatnot?
Well, you know, in the middle of January, I get a bit of a break.
Oh, okay.
I sleep until 5:30.
Sleep until 5:30, and then you got to milk the chickens and... No, that's not what you do there. All right, well, thank you. Kyle, God bless you for the ways in which you bring the simplicity to all of us. We all, as you said, I agree. I include myself. We all need a little more simplicity. And you're right. Jesus didn't hang on the cross for us to have, not that we shouldn't have modern conveniences, but that we really kind of be more connected to one another and this beautiful gift of the planet that he gave us. So, yes, thank you.
Thank you, Father Dave. God bless.
God bless.